morning. Does anyone have a chance to look over the assignment that I gave out last time? Have a chance to look at it. Okay. I'd like to start this morning by seeing how we can look at such a, for now at least, what appears to be a rather large assignment, and see how we can start working with an outline how you would go about doing this problem. So, if you look at the assignment, okay, there's a whole bunch of things we're going to do with each of the sets of data that are on the reverse of the page. Okay? Therefore, we learned last time that we have what's called a standard read loop. So if I was to outline, well, I'm obviously not going to write the program for you, but give you an outline of how you would do it. The first thing we would do is we would read, okay, one set of data. So you're going to read it from a file, and you're going to use whatever you call the input file, in file, whatever, to three values, A, B, and C. In this assignment, by the way, since this is a mathematical assignment, using the letters A, B, and C are meaningful variables, because this is math, and using X would be a meaningful variable. Normally, I wouldn't accept variables that are a single letter, but what are you going to call it here? This is A, B, and C. That's what they're called in the formula, so that it's meaningful. So when you read the first set of data, okay, that's going to be something of the form, and we'll replace this English sentence with something of the form in file, or whatever you want to call it, to A, B, C. So we read the first three sets of data. Now, as usual, our read loop determines whether or not we're finished. So we'll use a while loop, while, and we already know the idiom that we use. What idiom do you use for checking to see whether or not there's any more data? We say while not, okay, in file dot EOF. Okay? And then that begins the body of the loop. And the only thing we're going to add to the body of this read loop is that, of course, before we come back around again, we're going to have another in file to A, B, and C. That's the standard loop that we always have whenever we want to read one or more sets of data until there are none left. What I need to fill in here, in other words, in the body of the loop, is the process for proceeding to solve for one single set of data. Okay? Because this loop, all this loop does is it gets a set at a time until there are none left. So we get a first set, and we're going to process it. Okay? So I'm going to move to the other board to fill in this box. We now only need to consider a single set. So let's see what the algorithm is. The algorithm says, read in three integer values for A, B, and C. We've done that. Print the polynomial in the format above. So the first statement in that box will be some kind of outfile statement, which you will fill in so that it prints it out in the form of AX squared plus BX plus C equals zero. Okay, and it looks like the sample on the reverse side. Okay, you will figure that out. I'm going to put the number 2 here because that's the second step in our algorithm. Then it says, we're going to determine if the A value is zero. Now, if A is zero, that means there's no solution. Okay? So I will simply now say something along the following. If, okay, A equals 0, remember that equals equals means equality, true and false. If that's true, then we need to print a message. So let's open up a little brace. Okay, we're going to outfile some message, and of course we'll let you fill in what the message is supposed to be, and we want to count this invalid set of data. So remember, we're going to set up a whole bunch of counters, And those characters are all going to be initialized to zero. And in this case, I'll simply say that invalid, okay, plus plus. So we'll add one to that counter, which we set to zero before we even started this loop. Okay? Yes? Oh, sure, that's of course. I'm only giving you an outline of the program. I'm not declaring any of the variables for you, and of course you need to initialize things to what they have to be initialized to. This is just the outline. This is a large program, first time, but you're going to have to now fill in the details. Otherwise, I might as well write the whole program. Okay? So that's what we're going to do if A equals equals zero. But what if it's not? Then we go to step number four. Else, if, okay, now what do we want to know if in step number four? What's it say? Else if b squared minus 4ac is less than zero. And then we want to do something. So we'll make that condition. Else if b times b minus 4 times a times c is less than zero, what do we want to do? Well, according to this, as you probably remember from algebra, if the b squared minus 4ac is less than zero, it means the square root is negative, which of course means that the data set is also going to be invalid. So again, we're going to say some kind of message, outfile, some appropriate message, which I leave to you, and it says count this also as an invalid piece of data. They add one to the invalid counter. We end up there. Step five, all other sets of data are valid. Okay? So else, we're going to now handle all the valid sets of data. Okay? So let's put a big box here, because I'm running out of room. And in this box, okay, we're going to handle valid data. That's my comment. Okay? Of course, I have no room to fill this in here, so I guess I'm going to have to go now to the middle of the board to fill this out. So let's go and now work on the middle. All other sets are valid. So now we're in that box. What are we going to do there? First of all, count this as a valid set. So we're going to have again another counter called valid. And we're going to add one to that. So this is now going to be step number five. Okay? And print a message. Again, outfile, some appropriate message. Again, I leave it to you to provide the message. Now, we're up to step number six. And step number six says like this. If the C value is zero, so if C equals equals zero, print a message that there is no last term, outfile, again, some appropriate message, and it says, count how many times this happens, so we need another counter. This is going to be, let's call this the no last term counter. No last term. That's our another counter. I'll add one to it. That's what we do with C equals zero. We still can compute the x value. So now we're going to say x1 equals negative b plus the square root, because we can't use the square root symbol, we have to use sqrt, plus sqrt of what? B times b minus 4 times a times c, okay, all of this divided by 2 times A. Remember the parentheses. And X2, of course, will be equal to minus B minus, etc., 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 which you can fill in on your own. Okay, that was number 7. Now we're up to number 8. Well, we're up to number 6. I skipped. This is 6. And this is 7. And now we're up to number 8 in our instructions. You notice as I go through the instructions, I sort of convert it into English-like code. Not a real program, not getting bogged down now with semicolons and details and so on, but I'm trying to take the English statement of the problem on the sheet and convert it into something that looks like a program. That's called pseudocode. P-S-E-U-D-O-C-O-D-E. It's English-like code, not real programming code. You can't compile it, no semicolons. Obviously the grammar is not correct, but it's almost code. It's another technique instead of using a flowchart. And for bigger programs, it's probably best that you do this before you start actually writing the code. Because then you get bogged down in the details and you make a mistake. I'm just taking this and sort of converting it into a more specific form. Then you just fill in the details, fill in the declarations, fill in the initializations, and you're done. So what is, now we're up to number 8. Okay? Number 8, and again I have no room here, so I'm going to erase this board. We'll switch to another sheet of paper on your notes. And number 8, which I will repeat right over here, says compare X1 and X2. Okay? So we'll say, again, if they are equal, if X1 equals X2, print, that obviously means there's only one solution. So again, we're going to want to print some message, outfile some appropriate message that you will fill out, and count how many times this happens. So we need another counter. So what are we going to call this counter? I guess one solution. One solution. Okay? So I'll call it one, or well, you choose another name, not necessarily my name. One solution plus plus. Okay? If X1 equals negative X2, okay? Now, if this is true, this can't be true. Else, if X1 equals negative X2, again, we want to print a message, outfile message, that there's no middle term, and count how many times this happens. So again, another counter. No middle term plus plus. Okay? So if they're equal, we print that out. If they're equal to this, and if there are 2 valid values, okay, print the 2 x values and count how many times this occurs. So now we're going to simply, at this point, print the 2 x values. Okay? So if else, if this, they're not equal and they're not negative to each other, okay? Else, again, outfile some message and another counter, 2 terms plus plus. And that is, this is number 8, this is number 9. Okay? Piece by piece by piece. Okay? Now we're up to number 10. Number 10 says, so again, I'm going to this time now erase this whole thing here. Okay? Check the values by plugging them back into the polynomial equation. So what are we going to do? We're going to simply say, okay, that, okay, we're going to, number 1, plug the first x value, say y equals the a value, okay, times x squared, but it's the x1, we'll start with that one, x a times x1 times x1 plus b times x1 plus c, compute the y, okay, and that should be the near zero, okay? So we will now say, okay, print the message, okay, so we will simply say out file, some appropriate message, and we'll print out the y that we just computed. Maybe we'll want to print out not only the y, but the x1 and the y, to show that given x1, y should be 0. And then we'll do the other one. We'll do y equals a times x2, etc., etc. And again, print a message for that one. And so on. Okay? That's the end of the process that we do with one set of data. And so if you, the first thing I started, that big while loop, which is no longer on the board, we now go and get the next set of data, and the next set of data, and the next set of data. Eventually, we run out of data, and we drop out of the loop, and so therefore at the bottom, after that very first sheet which I erased, you're going to now do number 11. Okay, and this is the very last thing that you do, so I'm not going to put it here because this is all in that big loop. After the loop, okay, at the bottom of the loop, you then do number 11. I'm not just a bunch of printing stuff, so I'll just put the number 11 there to remind you that that's, you do step 11, which is to print all of these things. Okay? So by taking a look at this, admittedly, what looks like a complicated program, and then breaking it up into pieces, without getting hung up on the details, you can then go, fill in the details, and start it working. Eventually, I hope you will get this working. But let's look at this program for a moment. It's a huge program. The main is going to be very, very big. Correct? I mean, it's already big. I had to erase the board 3 times. So what you now need to decide, and this I leave to your own, is the next step. How can I make the main simpler by breaking up different things into functions? Okay? In other words, different parts will be a function, so you'll create the function. For example, computing y equals that line, could be a function that computes y. And we can first send it x1, then we can send it x2. Remember last time we talked about how to send values to a function. Okay? And there are other things that you have that can be going into individual functions. First get it running, it'll be about a page or two of code. Then look to see if there's pieces of it, like put boxes, that I can pull out, give them a name, like prompt use or something intelligent, and call it. That makes the main much smaller, much simpler, and the work is done elsewhere. Okay, that's how to attack such a problem. And at this point, certainly, you should not have any problem. Except that I've shown, for the first time, I've actually written out a whole bunch of if statements, which we will talk about in detail later on, the syntax. But I asked you last time to start reading about if statements and else statements, and to see how they are used, and you'll notice that it's quite clear what the program is going to do. Pseudocode is a very, very important technique to learn. Otherwise, any assignment I give you is going to overwhelm you. You're not going to, where do I begin? You're going to freeze. It's like having to start writing a term paper. You just can't, where do I start? Make sort of a little outline, at least in your mind, even if you don't make real outlines in English classes, but at least make a little outline of what you're going to write. You can start conquering the problem. Any questions? Yes. So we need a counter somewhere. I left that a counter. That count, each time you read something in, no, you're going to add that in the very beginning. You're going to read a piece of once in the loop. Data plus plus. Number of data sets plus plus. Right in the beginning. Or, of course, you can add up all these other counters, and they should add up to the right value. Because if you have all the valid and all the invalids, then that should add up to the number. Anybody have a chance yet to look at or to listen to some of the recordings to see if they're any useful? If they're useful, okay. Especially useful if you've missed a class. Now that I'm recording everything and putting it up on the web, see if it helps. Okay. Last time at the end of the class, I introduced a new statement, a new type of loop called a for loop. Okay. A while loop, which we've been using all along, is useful. We want to repeat a process over and over again until some condition occurs. While something is true, do it over and over and over again. So just this one. While we have not run out of data, continue the process. Sometimes we have loops that we know ahead of time how many times we want to repeat. Do something 10 times. Do something 20 times. In that case, I introduced a for loop. And the for loop had the following form, again, to add it to your list of statements. For expression 1, semicolon, expression 2, semicolon, expression 3, do a statement. Or many statements if we use braces. And last time I went through how this works, and I showed you that this is exactly equivalent to if we do this. First, we do expression 1. Then, we check to see while expression 2 is true. We then do the statement. And then expression 3, and repeat the process. These two pieces of code are identical. So if, for example, I was to write for I equals 1, I is less than 10, I plus plus, C out, I end line, what would be printed? Well, what is I? Well, is that all it is? Let's see. Let's trace this program through. First, I said we do the first expression. So I starts out being 1. Is I less than 10? Yes. So we print out I, which prints out a 1. Then we go here and do I plus plus, which makes I what? 2. Is that less than 10? So we'll do this, which prints out 2. Come back here. I plus plus makes this now a 3. So we print out the 3. Okay? Let's keep on going. I plus plus, I is now 4. Is that less than 10? Yes. So we print it out. Come back. 5. Is that less than 10? Print it out. Back up here. I plus plus. 6. Is that less than 10? Print it out. Back to here. 7. Is that less than 10? Print it out. Back to here. 8. Is that less than 10? Yes. So we'll print it out. Okay, I'm running out of room. 8. Come back up here. 9. Is that less than 10? So we will print it out. Come back up here. 10. Is that less than 10? So we're out of the loop. We continue. So what does this do? It prints the numbers from 1 through 9. We wanted a 10 to print. What would we do if we wanted this to print 10? What should I change it to? Then it'll print the numbers 1 to 19. I just wanted to print the numbers from 1 to 10. Yes, I could do that. That's sure. That would 100% right. Say Y is less than 11 would do that. Or probably it's clearer to say I less than or equal to 10 rather than I is less than 11, but that certainly would work. It would be 100% correct. Here's what I'd like you to do now. I would like you to write a program that adds the numbers from 1 to 10 instead of simply printing them out. That adds the numbers. I'm going to leave that on the board because it's not big, much of a modification. Add the numbers from 1 to 10. Okay, I'm going to give you about 60 seconds to think this thing through. Going to add something. So we need a variable to hold the sum. So let's start with a variable called sum and initialize it to 0. And now say simply for I equals 1, I less than or equal to 10, I plus plus sum equals sum plus I. That's it. Instead of printing the values out as I did in that loop, I'm simply adding them into the sum. We've done accumulators many times. We did it when we had to take an average. We want to count something. So we have a variable called sum, and we add sum into it, the I into it, 10 times. Is that clear? This code. Now I'm going to show you some variations on a for loop. Because a for loop actually is a very, very flexible statement. You remember that in the for loop, we always do this first, then we do this, then we go and do this, and then we do this, and go back to here. Right? That's the loop. That's the way the for loop works, over and over and over again. It turns out that any one of these three expressions is optional. If it's not there, it's not there. You just go on. Let me show you some examples of variations that will add the number from 1 to 10. Not necessarily because they are better, just to show you that you want to have to understand how the for loop works. This will do exactly the same thing. I equals 1. Sum equals 0. 4. Nothing here. I less than or equal to 10. I plus plus. Sum plus equals I. This does exactly the same thing. First of all, sum plus equals I is just the same thing as saying sum equals sum plus I. We learned that as a shortcut. Secondly, I did I equals 1 here rather than doing it in here. Why I would do that, it's not particularly a good reason for doing it, but it works. I need to have the semicolon here, because if I left the semicolon out, the computer would think that this is the first expression. In other words, you need to have placeholders, even if you leave something out. When you leave something out, it's called a null expression. Simply is a fancy way of saying an empty value, an empty expression. This is certainly clearer and shorter, but that works. Let me show you several other ways. Each one increasingly more silly, but they all would work. Look at this one. 4. I equals 1, comma, not semicolon, comma, sum equals 0, semicolon, I less than or equal to 10, semicolon, I plus plus, sum plus equals I. Again, remember that the semicolon is what determines clause number 1, second expression, third expression. The comma, first time we're seeing a comma using an expression. It's an operator. Okay, it's in one that big list. All it means, it's called sequential operator. It just says first do this, then do the next thing. Okay? So, what are we doing here? We're saying I equals 1, sum equals 0, then we check to see if I is less than or equal to 10. If not, sum plus equals I plus plus, and so on and so forth. Is this one better than the other one? No. But it works. Again, I'm not showing this to you because I expect you to do this or want you to do this. I think that one's the best one. That's the clearest. But to show you that there are alternatives in how to read C statements. Now, we're going to get back to this in a moment, but first I need to make a diversion here and talk a little bit about the plus plus operator and also the minus minus operator. We've seen these before. I just used them. Plus plus is called the increment operator, and the minus minus is called the decrement. It subtracts one from I. Each of these come in two forms. Plus plus I, or I plus plus. And similarly, minus minus I, and I minus minus. This one is called the prefix form, and this one is called the postfix form. And when used alone, in other words, like a statement like this, by itself, it makes no difference whether you say I plus plus or plus plus I. When used alone, it makes no difference. But there is a difference between them when they're used in another context, and it's a little tricky. So let me give you an example. Suppose I have, I'm going to erase this one and work up here. The following statement. Int A, B, C equals 0. Okay. And then I say A equals plus plus C. And then I'm going to say C out A and C. And then I'm going to say B equals C plus plus. And then say C out B and C. Okay? Notice the difference between these statements. Here I'm using the prefix form, and here I'm using the postfix form. Now, both of these are different than this, because here I'm using the statement alone, I plus plus, not within another statement. Here it makes no difference. I plus plus or plus plus I be exactly the same. But let's see how this works. So I'm going to trace it by having variables A, B, and C. And C starts out at 0. A and B have no values. Okay? Now, this statement says like this. Find the value of C, which is what right now? 0. Add 1 to it. Okay? And so, put 1 into A. A is 1. So when I go ahead and let me back up. I didn't do the whole thing yet. Again, C starts out 0. It says, take the value of C, add 1 to it. C is now 1. And put it into A. So A is 1. And so this will print a 1 and a 1. Okay? Everybody with me? The prefix form says, take the value that's in the variable, add 1 to it, and then use that value in subsequent statements. This is different. This says, first take the value of C. What is C right now? 1. Use it. Put it into B. So B is now 1. When you're finished, add 1 to C, which makes C 2. And so this now will print 1 and 2. Let's review. The prefix form says, first add 1. and then go on as usual and use that value. The postfix form says use the old value. Do whatever you want to do with it. And afterwards, add one to it and go on to the next statement. Prefix, now they're confusing. Okay, but you have to know the difference. And in the exercise manual, which I'm telling you over and over again, on the quiz that we're going to have, I'm going to announce by next week when the quiz is going to be, you, or the test rather, you're going to have lots of these problems. Do the exercise, that's where I'm taking the tests from. Or vice versa, they came from tests. Okay? So, given the way these things work, I'm going to show you yet another way of adding the numbers from 1 to 10. I'm going to show you two more. I equals 1. Sum equals 0. 4. Nothing. Empty. I less than or equal to 10. Nothing. Still need that semicolon there. That shows nothing here. Sum plus equals I plus plus. This is a pretty horror of a statement to understand, but let's work it out. Let's trace this thing through. So I have variables I, and I have variable sum. And I starts out being 1, and sum starts out being 0. Okay, when you get to a for statement, first you do this. Okay, there's nothing there. Then you do this. Is I less than or equal to 10 now? So then we do this. Now what does this say to do? First of all, this is the postfix form, right? So first I will take the value of I, which is currently what? 1. And I'll add it into sum, which is what sum plus equals means. Right? Sum plus equals means sum equals sum plus I. So I is currently 1, and I'm going to add that into the sum. So sum becomes now a 1. And then, after the fact, because it's plus plus, postfix, I will then add 1 to I, making I 2. And then we go back, remember, to do this. And there's nothing there. So then we go back to do this. Well, is I less than or equal to 10? Yes. So I get back to here. Sum plus equals I. So therefore, sum is now sum 1 plus 2 is 3. And then, postfix, afterwards, add 1 to I, which makes I 3. And then again, we go back to here, where there's nothing to be done. And then we go back here to see if it's still true. Is I still less than or equal to 10? Yes. So again, we do sum plus equals I. So therefore, sum is going to be 3 plus 3, which is 6. And then because it's postfix, we will now add 1 to I, which is 4. Would this work if it was prefix? No, because the first time we would add 1 to I before, we would never add the first 1 into 0. We would have made I 2 immediately, and then we would have added it in, so it would be 1 short. But you see, postfix and prefix makes a difference. Finally, just to show you how bizarre this whole for statement can get, and again, I certainly would not, under any circumstances, want you to do this. This is still the clearest form. But just to make sure that you understand how to follow through a complex statement, suppose I do this. 4, I equals 1, comma, sum equals 0, semicolon, I less than or equal to 10, semicolon, sum plus equals I plus plus, close the parentheses, and put an empty semicolon here. Let's understand how this works. Okay? Again, I'm going to trace it. I'm going to have variable I and a variable sum. And the first thing we do is, remember, it's clause number 1, clause number 2, then we do clause number 3, which is this thing empty here, and then we do 4, and then we go back to 2. So let's follow this through. I equals 1, sum equals 0. Okay. Is I less than or equal to 10? Yes. So I go do this. Okay, I did it. There's nothing to do. Then I go back to here. And it says sum plus equals I plus plus, which we already know does what? It adds this into this, and then it makes that into a 2. Because it's postfix, after the fact. And what do you do after you do number 4? You go back to number 2. And you check to see, is I less than or equal to 10? Yes, it is. So then you're supposed to go down here and do it. Okay, we did it. Nothing to be done. And we go back here. Sum plus equals I. So we know what that does. That adds 2 into 1, which is 3. Then adds 1 into this, which is 3. And so on and so forth. It gives exactly the same results. Is it a clear statement? If you saw this on the code, would you? Was it clear? Is it easy to follow? Well, maybe if you're very smart. I prefer doing things nice and clearly do it this way and not rely on tricks and stuff. But you should understand how this works. This is what's sometimes called clever code. In other words, trying to show how brilliant you are. It's what hackers like to do. Okay? To write the shortest piece of code that does everything, which no one else can follow. And that shows how, you know, how brilliant they are. Okay? But today, in the past, in the old days, you'd get a good job being a hacker. Today, not. Today, it's much more important to learn how to get along with people than learning how to... Hackers, you know, sit in front of a computer. They forget to take showers. They don't eat. They're up all night. They don't have a social life. They have bottles of canned Coca-Cola all around them or, you know, caffeine, other caffeine products. And they don't know about the rest of the world. Code is what it's all about. Programming. It was usually guys. Okay, there aren't too many girl hackers, although there are a few now. Today, that's not the culture anymore. Today, programs are so large and so complicated that you got to learn how to play with a team. You got to learn how to get along with people. You got to learn how to go out to lunch with people and talk things over. You have to learn how to communicate. This is not a way of communicating. This is a way of showing I'm brilliant. I know I'm brilliant, but I don't have to prove it to you. Okay? I need to write code that's clear and easy to you for you to follow. That's a general rule. When you have a choice between doing something that is clever and can be done in one line, but then you have to sit around and explaining it to somebody, fall upon the way of doing things clear. Clarity is certainly much more important than writing code that is super clever. Now, you might ask a question, just to get back to this. This statement is a null statement. In other words, there's really something here. How do I know there's something here? Because there's a semicolon, and before a semicolon has to be something. That's the rules of grammar in C, that semicolons follow something. There's an invisible something here. It's called the null statement, an empty statement. I have to have a semicolon here, because the fourth statement requires me to have one clause, two clause, three clause, and then at least one statement. So I have to have a statement. Would it make a difference to C? Would it complain if instead of doing it this way, you did it this way? Would it make any difference? Does C++ care whether you make a statement on one line or on two lines? No, it doesn't. So as far as the compiler is going to be concerned, those will work the same. So why did I deliberately put it on a separate line? Can you tell me why I deliberately put it on a separate line? That's right. Because we expect something to be on the next line. No, usually you don't have statements like this. So if I put another statement, I continue my program, I start writing code, the person who reads this code will probably not see that little semicolon over there. Forget about it. And therefore they will think that this statement here belongs to the 4, when in fact it doesn't. It's a separate statement. To highlight that, to make sure that you don't miss that semicolon, we'll see whenever we have a null statement, and we'll have to have it at other times as well, we'll deliberately, as a matter of style, call attention to it by putting a semicolon on a line by itself to show there's something there. Even though C++ will treat both ways the same way, the human being will realize now that the next thing doesn't belong to the fourth statement. But if I would have left the semicolon on the other line, you may have overlooked that semicolon and may have misread it. Okay. I'd like you to do the following little program in the next, let's give you 5 to 10 minutes. I want you to write a program, a whole program, that prints a little table. You could print it to the screen. As follows. You'll have a heading, number, square, square root, and cube. So it'll print the heading, and then it'll fill in the chart. 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 4, 1.4, 8, 3, 9, etc., etc. And you'll do this for the numbers from 1 to 10. So I want your program that you're to write now, and this, by the way, you'll, on the test, you also have to write small programs, is to write a program that prints a table with headings for the numbers 1 to 10, their squares, their square roots, and their cubes. Now, before you sit down, is there any input over here? Does the user have to put anything in? Is there any input that we expect here? Is there any data that's going to be processed? No. The computer should self-generate the numbers from 1 to 10. We know how to do that. We have a loop. We're going to use a for loop. Right? Okay, sit down. I mean, you're all sitting. Take a few moments and write a complete program to print the a table of numbers from 1 to 10, numbers, squares, square roots, and cubes with their heading. Don't look at the sheets that I handed you out, because the solution is the next problem on the sheet. So that'll defeat the purpose right now. Another 3 minutes should do it. Okay. Let's begin. Let's look at the solution, which should be quite simple. I will call this program print a table, and will include standard lib, the IO stream, and because we are going to be using the functions for square root, we'll use the CMath library as well. So I include those three, and I have my using namespace, and I will have a variable to hold the number, the square, the cube, and the root. Now, the heading. Do we want to print the heading one time or 10 times? Once. So that's going to be printed right away from the beginning. So I will say C out slash N. What does slash N do? Goes to the next line, just like end line does. Number. And then I use slash T. What does slash T do? A tab. It just puts in a bunch of spaces. Just neater. And then square, slash T, cube, slash T, root, slash N, slash N. And that's going to print two blank lines. So that's my heading. Now what did I want to do? I wanted to print a table of numbers from 1 to 10. We know how to do that. We just did that. For number equals 1, number less than or equal to 10, plus plus number. And what do we want to do in each case? Compute the square, which is number times number, or you could have used POW number comma 2. It'd be just as good. Cube is equal to number times the square, or you could have said POW number comma 3. Root equals square root of number. C out number, a tab, square, a tab, cube, a tab. The root, and then the end line. Notice just as a matter of passing how I line things up. When I split the line, I indented the second part of that line to show that it's part of the line beforehand. Just a matter of style. And then go back and do it again for the next number. Round and round and round. We'll go around. How many times are we going to go around this loop? 10 times. And so let me just run this program and compile it and run it. So it compiles, I hope. There it goes. And it runs and prints a nice looking table. Now, you'll notice just that some of these numbers don't have any decimal points after them because they were even and I didn't use the precision statement. If I wanted to have everything have, let's say, four places, I'd have to use a precision of four. But for now, I just didn't want to clutter the program with that. This looks fine. You might also notice that the numbers are left justified, as if you would write a list of names, instead of right justified the way you normally line up numbers. Right? Normally when you line up numbers, you line them up with their decimal points on the right side rather than on the left side. We'll learn how to handle that a little later on. That's just a matter of another statement to tell us to do it on the right rather than on the left. Not a big deal. Are there any questions? How many of you got at least close to this? Feel comfortable that you knew what was going on? Okay. Yes? Yeah, this is such a... What would you want to write a function for? What would you want to write a function for? But we have a function for square root. It's called square root. For cube, we also have... We could have just as easily done this by saying POW of number... comma 3. Right? I don't think writing your own functions makes sense when there is already a built-in function. Okay? And that's the same thing. Suppose you wanted the numbers to make a table for numbers 1 to 50. What change would you make? Right? That's how easy it is to work with for loops. Let's move on. We have a function called power. What does power do? We have a function power that POW of AB calculates A raised to the B power. We have that as a built-in function that we can use. This function works even if the numbers are negative. A to the negative B would work too. Of course, that's just 1 over AB. And it would even work for fractions. In other words, if you wrote, let's say, 0.3 comma 0.7, it would raise 0.3 to the 0.7 power, which, of course, is the root. Okay? So it's a very powerful function. Let's make believe we don't have this function for a moment. Suppose I want to write a function that does the same thing this does. But to simplify it for our purposes, I'll do it only for integers and positive values. Okay? So of course you won't want to use the function we write now in class because the one that's built in is much better. But we're going to write a function. Write a function to compute a raised to the b power for a, b, integers, and positive. The way I write the function is the way they wrote the function. Of course, they made it more complicated because they made it more general purpose. So we're going to write a function to do this. Before we write the function, we have to figure out how does one, given 5 raised to the third power, so for A is 5 and B is 3, how do you compute this? You go 5 times 5 times 5, right? In other words, you multiplied 5 3 times, by itself 3 times. And if I gave you 2 to the 8th power, so A is 2 and B is 8, you would go 2 times 2 times 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You would multiply 2 by itself 8 times. That suggests that I want to do a loop that goes around the exponent. If I have a product which starts out being 0, because products have to products have to start out being, when you accumulate a product, it starts out as 1, okay? And then you want to do a loop for I equals 1, I less than or equal to B, I plus plus, product equals product times A. Let's see. In this case, 5 to the third power. You give me an A of 5 and a B is 3. How many times will this loop go around if B is 3? 3 times, right? And each time in the loop, it'll do product equals product times A, which is 5. So it'll do the 1 times 5 times 5 times 5. What happens if you give me an A of 2 and a B of 8? How many times will this loop go around? 8 times. The first time, it'll go 2 times 1, then 2 times 2, times 2, times 2, times 2, times 2, 8 times. So product will be the answer. So this little box describes how to compute the power, 8 raised to the B power. What do you have to feed in to this box for it to work? What are you feeding into the box? Hmm? Two values. You're feeding in A and B. Two values. And what does this box give you back? Where is the answer? What is the in which variable is the answer going to be? Product. In other words, we want to send the box the values A and B. We call those arguments, remember? And we want to return the answer, which is contained in the product. This is a diagram of a typical function. Something comes in, it does, and something comes out. Okay? Let's write this function. It's actually quite simple, and this will be very useful when you write your big homework assignment, because you'll be wanting to write functions to compute things like square roots of blah, 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 and so on. You'll be able to use the math functions, but you'll still need a function for b squared minus 4ac over 2a, that whole thing. Very simple to turn that into a function. So let's close this for a moment. And let's open up something called, I don't know what I called it. What did I call it? A power b. Okay. First, let's look at the function which is going to implement just what I've shown you here. Everyone have that in front of them? Remember, every function should start out with a comment. Function calculates a raised to the b power for non-negative values of b. Okay. The function I'm going to call a power b. I can't call it POW because someone will confuse it with the one that's already there. So I'll call it a power b. Okay, let's look at the header of the function. What did I tell you the function needs in order to function? No pun intended. What does the function need? What do we have to give it? Two values, a and b. Now a and b could be anything. It could be 5 and 3, it could be 2 and 8, but I need to be able to hold two numbers. So I'm going to, in the parentheses, describe them. Float A, float B. I'm creating here what we call, who remembers what I call A and B? Anyone remember what they were called? They're not strictly variables. I gave them a different name. Remember? Last class? Huh? Close? 5 and 3 is the argument. 2 and 8 is the argument. What is A and B? Had another name. Parameters. Remember that? Okay? The thing you send, the actual things you send, 2 and 8 in this case, would be the arguments to the function. The thing that accepts it, okay, is the parameter. So I'm creating two parameters, A and B, both of which are float. Okay? Now, before we even move on, when this function finishes, it's going to give me something back. Let's describe it. What is that thing that I'm going to give it back? A number, float. So that's the purpose over here. The name of the function, a power b. In parentheses, we define the parameters that we'll be receiving. And over here, we're going to use float. Now, we've had functions before, like prompt user. But prompt user gave us nothing back. So what was the type of the function? Void. The main gives us back a zero. So its type was an int. This function is going to give us back a number that's going to be a floating number. So its type is a float. Okay? Now comes the body, which is really what's within this box. I create variables I and product, which I need to use in that box. Product equals 1. For I equals 1, I less than or equal to B plus plus I. Product times equals A. And when that's finished, what do you want to give me back? The product. So I return product. Gives me back the value. Okay? Then we'll see how you write the function. The function header now includes parameters. It returns a value. This has to match this. Okay? We do the computation. We send back the value. Now you can only send back a single value. That's a limitation. You can only return one number. But that's fine. That's what our diagram shows. We send it two things. We're getting back out one thing. You have flour, sugar, chocolate, all the ingredients that you take in, and out comes out a single chocolate cake. One thing comes out, lots of things go in. Everybody with me? Okay, that's the function. Very, very simple. Now, how do we use this function? So, let's look at the main. Int main, blah, blah, float, A, B, C, D, result, I don't care. That's a bunch of variables. Here is the function prototype, the function that we've just defined. Remember, now that we're going to use it, we have to put the function prototype. Well, what does the function prototype look like? A power B receives float float, two float numbers, and sends us back a float. Looks just like the header, except it has a semicolon at the end and it doesn't include the names of the variables. Now we use it. I use it like I use any function. I can say result equals a power b a comma b, if 3 and 5, plus b c comma d, and then I print out the results. Now the printing statement here, you'll see in a minute, I did an elaborate printing statement to print things out looking really nice. And you might have to do something like this when I ask you in the homework assignment to print AX squared plus BX plus C equals zero, whatever, neatly. So we'll look at the output in a moment. But let's just make us think we understand how to use it. What is this going to calculate? It's going to first get A and B, which is 3 raised to the 5th power. Then it's going to get C and D, which is 2 raised to the 5th power. Add the results together, put it in the variable result, and then we'll print it out. Okay. Now, I want to point out something very, very important. The fact that I have the letters A and B here, and that I happen to have the letters A and B here, is purely coincidental.